Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
No, absolutely fine. To this, it is the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing. Been away for a while, but I intend to do a lot more of these over the coming weeks. Today is going to be a pretty cool episode because I am going to interview the captain of Benetton Treviso, Mr. Dean Budd, who is also now an Italy international. Any of you who've been listening to the Egg Chasers podcast will know I've taken a little bit of a shine to Treviso, just in time for them to be, well, equal on wins and losses for the first time in God knows how long. So it should be a good interview. Remember, you can find us on Twitter, at the Rugby Dungeon, me, at Jay Beardmore, or if you want to follow the Egg Chasers, please do, at Rugby Podcast. Whilst we're on the subject of Egg Chasers, just remember, we are out every Monday without fail, so give us a listen, subscribe, do all those good things. Anyway, this is Mr. Dean Budd. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well. Just had a nice, chill day here in Italy and relaxing at home for the night.
Nice. So what has your day consisted of today?
It's been a bit strange, really. It's been a day off for us all here, but the team's just come back from South Africa and we had a game this weekend. Yeah. So we kind of start together as a team tomorrow.
I assume you missed the tour to South Africa, did you?
Yeah, there was a load of us that were involved in the Six Nations. They were in the fortunate situation they have a pretty good base of high quality players, so we put out a really class team against South Africa and a few of us got to have a rest.
Just out of interest, what was your reaction when you found out you're going to be playing South African teams this year?
I was pretty excited, really. I was always wondered if Super Rugby had grown that far ahead of European rugby. Just when you watch Super Rugby on telly, I played 10 years ago Super Rugby, and I think it's just an incredible level now. And
it is, isn't it?
To have a couple of Super Rugby teams involved was a cool kind of challenge to put ourselves against them.
Yeah, I think that the Cheetahs in particular have turned some heads.
Yeah, no, the Cheetahs are class. We were pretty lucky to beat them here. I think we got them on a bad day. They're really, really good, play some incredible rugby. But yeah, I feel a bit for the Kings. They were in a situation where I think they were scratching to put 15 players on the field at the start of the season. So they're probably not a good comparison to what the same team they had for Super Rugby.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go because they've got a lot of political support, if nothing else. And, you know, give them a year, get some recruitment plans done. You know, I expect that they'll improve drastically next year.
Yeah, I have no doubts on that. The passion for rugby in South Africa and, watching the game, the facilities they've got there, they've got everything ready to turn themselves into a class team.
Now, we'll get into it shortly. Treviso, as it happens, have been the team which I've decided to support in the Pro 12 this year, so we'll get all into that. But I'm more interested in kind of your journey and how did you actually end up in Italy?
When I was, 23, I decided to, long story short, I didn't get picked to play Super Rugby and I was pretty disappointed with that. And I was young and dumb and kind of said, F you to New Zealand Rugby. And I didn't think that I had a future there and thought I was too old to hang around and really establish myself, which in hindsight was pretty dumb. But anyway, got on a plane to Japan and played a season in Japan, and the guy I played with there was a guy, Hottie Lowe, who played a bit for played for South Africa, and really a really amazing guy, and he had played in Treviso, and he kept on talking about how it was such an amazing place. And I said, well, I'm not really enjoying Japan. Can you help me out? And within a month, I probably signed a contract to come to Treviso, so I can, I would order him, really.
Wow. So, yeah. I mean, what was the disconnect then with you in New Zealand rugby? Why did you feel it wasn't working for you?
I guess I'd played Super Rugby and then played what, after that, I thought was probably one of the best seasons I've ever played, and then didn't get selected to play Super Rugby.
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah, I think a real knee-jerk reaction from a young, stupid kid to say, I'll never make it. If they're not going to pick me now, then I'll never make it. And I wasn't really prepared to put my head down and work on the things, because when I look back, I was getting a lot of advice and a lot of feedback on things and where I needed to improve as a player on field and off field, and I wasn't really prepared to listen. And as we do as humans, we tend to escape from run away from our problems, and that's probably how I ended up here.
Well, I mean, you don't need to tell me, I am the king of not taking advice. Yeah. If there's a life lesson that I should have learned, it's take more advice.
Yeah, no, can't do you any wrong, that's for sure.
and as for Japan, I mean, I guess if you're not into the culture and you're not into how they do things there, it is a big leap.
Yeah, I mean, I love the culture. I love the new experience at all, but it was just the solidarity. Like, we were there and five foreigners, and the Japan, maybe there was two or three Japanese boys that spoke English. And I mean, you just, it was a life just living alone, basically. It just felt like I was on another planet, just so isolated. So it was more for that. I think if I was there with a family and the right support networks, I mean, it'll be a really cool place to live. Like,
yeah,
the people are amazing, the food, the culture. It's I couldn't speak badly about it. I think it was more just my personal experience of just being feeling alone the whole time I was there.
Yeah, because it is completely different. I mean, even the words look different. It couldn't be more isolated.
No, it's not like you can kind of guess what something is on the menu and have a crack at it, even though I cried and God knows what I ate sometimes. But
yeah, certainly not one for fussy eaters. So you found your way to Italy. Just tell me a little bit then about this Treviso team, because it does seem like this year compared, particularly the last year and, well, the last 5 years, it's really going places.
Well, I mean, when I first arrived, we were a team on the up, and it was pretty exciting. And we finished seventh my first year, and we had, I think, a lot of respect from the league. And then the next year, the team just seemed to fall to pieces. I think that was a detriment of our success. Players started to be seen a lot more and were getting signed to go offshore. And I think a lot of players kind of lost their motivation to be in Italy. And we started losing more and more games by one or two points always. We're always competitive. And then, I mean, when the wheels started buckling, they decided to kick the coach. And then that really helped the wheels fall completely off. And then, yeah, we had a couple of years trying to rebuild, which we were building nothing, really. There was no real foundation. And that's something that Kieran and his coaching staff have really brought in. And Parva, the new director of sport, they've decided that you can't resolve a problem in a rugby team in a year. And it's a five-year process of trying to build players and invest in things to create, and that's what we did last year, and we're seeing the fruits of our labour this year a little bit.
So tell me about Treviso itself. Tell me about Benetton, the area. I mean, is it a bit of a rugby hotbed? Have you got many amateur players there? How is it? About as broad a question as I could possibly ask there.
I mean, as a place and as a city, it's wonderful. Like, it's really beautiful. We're a stone's throw from Venice. The cost of living's cheap. Food's delicious. There's very little to complain about the rugby field. I mean, as a rugby culture as a city. Yeah, we're known as a rugby city because, yeah, there's no soccer teams. I think maybe they do have one, actually, but it's Serie D or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, soccer doesn't exist here. And so there is that. Everyone loves rugby, but it's more the older generation because, I mean, Benetton back in the day in Italy they had tens of thousands of people packing out stadiums.
Did they really?
Yeah, it was unreal. I've seen tens of thousands. I've seen our stadium only holds like 7,000, but I've seen videos of them playing back in the day, and it's like a soccer game. There's flares in the crowd, and big flags, and people kind of basically packing onto the field.
Mm.
So they used to go mad for rugby, and as I was saying, like the last few years, we've struggled to keep that fan base, and that's something we're trying to win back by winning. Basically, it seems to bring people back. But yeah, with Benetton, we've got rugby from under six all the way through to under 18. I think there's plans to try and bring an academy, which there's always that plan, but it's whether they can get it past the federation.
Mm.
So they are really trying to grow rugby from the ground up here in Treviso.
And how about local clubs? I mean, do you have much engagement with them? I mean, are there even many local clubs around where you are?
Yeah, there. I mean, Benetton's the biggest, but there's loads of local clubs. Our connection to them, it's pretty limited. Like if we're doing something, we do it with Benetton because they're us. So we have to look after ourselves before we can go off anywhere else. But
yeah,
the guys, they got some of our video analysis plays for a club nearby. So we go down and cheer him on every now and again. And yeah, there's a lot of rugby around.
Nice. So it isn't like, say, in New Zealand where, you know, you've got your provincial teams and they go into the regions. There's no sort of pathway, if you like, from club rugby up to Benetton.
No, basically your club is, you've got a handful of clubs in the region and then Benetton, and it's the same in Moliano, but Moliano is like 30 minutes away, and part of us the same. And they have extra Lensa teams. There's like a competition, like a top 10 basically,
yeah.
Which sits under Benetton, but it doesn't feed into Benetton or Zebre. It's, it's Italy and everything's political and driven by money. So
yeah,
there's no general pathway. If I'm starting rugby at 10 years old and want to play right through to Benetton, I couldn't recommend someone a pathway to take because it all depends on what team's not bankrupt this year. It's an interesting one over here sometimes with the rugby.
So, I mean, coming from your background in New Zealand then, I mean, is that the thing which strikes you quite heavily, that there isn't a pathway and there isn't sort of one cohesive plan to get Italy winning or Benetton winning, utilising all of the country's assets?
Yeah, it's a massive issue here. And if you talk, you could pass by any rugby fan on the street and ask them, and there's just not there. If New Zealand's whole system is made on trying to make the All Blacks better, and that means from club to provincial to super and super to All Blacks, and there's just absolutely no plan here like that at all. It's all each for your own and good luck. And whoever arrives to the top and is ready to play for Italy, then they'll deal with it from there. And it's a massive problem. It's what's holding Italy back, if you ask me.
Really?
Yeah.
So here's a question for you then. When you came over and first laced up your boots for Benetton, did you expect that you'd be playing for Italy one day?
No. I mean, as a player, you always have those things in the back of your mind. But I think my contract was for 2 years. Like, I've never contract. A lot of guys that leave New Zealand are contracted for 3 years to play for that country. I think it's happened in Ireland.
Yeah.
Jared Payne did it. Bundiaki, blah. And there's loads of them that don't actually make it either, even though they're contracted for 3 years. But, no, it was never a thought process. And when it started to get nearer and nearer, then I thought it was an inevitability, and it didn't come. So yeah, when it finally came about last year, I was over the moon.
Yeah, yeah. Playing international rugby for anyone is hell of an honour.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, I go out every week and I play for Italy like it's my country. I don't think it's fair to say I play for Italy like I would for the All Blacks, because it's not a fair comparison. I play for Italy because I live here and this is my country, and I don't want to let anyone down that lives in Italy. I'm playing for their country, and I have to say I'm playing for my country, because otherwise I'm not going to give it my all.
Absolutely. Well, do you ever get frustrated with all the talk about project players and, you know, how they want to increase the residency rules and this, that and the other?
I guess because I am one.
To be fair...
It doesn't frustrate me at all, really. I mean, if someone's willing to invest 3 years of time into a foreign player who could break his leg and not be ready in that 3 years, and good on them. Like, for me, it's a waste of money. I think if you invest all that money into five young talents at 18 years old, I'm sure one of them's going to provide the goods by the time they're 21 and then have a 10-year career as a homegrown player. I think that's a much better strategy than investing in foreign players.
I tend to agree with you, actually. I mean, you just have to look at, say, I mean, I always look at the English clubs. And the marvellous thing about the English clubs is if you track all the players back to where they came from originally, if all the clubs just gave their youth teamers a chance, most of clubs would have bloody good teams. And there seems to be this infatuation with getting someone to win right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, for a player like, I guess, Brad Shields is going over and from New Zealand, and he's probably going as an England player, by the all sounds of it.
Yeah, definitely.
But for me, that's fine, because if he's got English blood, then he's English. For me, that's if someone's got the blood in them, then I've got no issues with them playing for another country. Doesn't matter where they were born for me.
Yeah, I guess what frustrates me really is you can't have it both ways, which is like it can't be a professional sport on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you can't deny professional players for playing for a certain team. So I'm not really in favour of the 5-year residency stuff, because quite frankly, if you're a professional, you know, as you've found yourself in this situation, if you've got that opportunity to play international rugby, why shouldn't you take it?
Yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, it's our job, and if I decided to go work in America and for a corporate bank and rose to the top of that corporate bank and played on it, traded on an international level, it's the same thing. It's not a great example, but it's just like
the whole
world's professional, and I think if you're the best, then you're the best. You deserve to be on that scene.
No, I actually think it's a brilliant example, because I think you've nailed it. You know, international rugby is for the best players, and you know it is nice to have lads from a certain place, but for me, it's far from the be all or end all.
But I mean, we had Scotland their last game, and chatting with half of them, I think I was talking to two Kiwis, an Aussies, and an English guy. Like they're all foreign. They're all not Scottish as well, but they're Scottish by blood. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I've had the pleasure of interviewing Byron McGuigan. He's from Namibia. I think is Nick Grigg a Kiwi?
The 12.
I mean, there's absolutely loads. There's absolutely loads of them, and quite frankly, it's New Zealand's own fault for being so good at rugby.
I guess it's a nice point.
So, when you first came over to Treviso, do I call it Benetton or Treviso? What is it?
You know what? Someone asked me that question one go, and I don't know the answer. I think I always call it Benetton, but then someone told me that It's Trevino. I don't know. I go with Benetton.
Well, I'm looking at my shirt now, and it says Benetton Rugby. So we'll go with Benetton. When you first came to Benetton, then obviously you're from a country with a rich rugby heritage. Was there quite a lot of leaning on your knowledge and what you know, or did you just sort of sneak into the team kind of fairly quietly and just did what you're told?
I did what I was told. The advice I listened to when I left New Zealand was just shut your mouth and get on with it. As I was going to Japan, because you just can't see if you get out of line there, you get shoved back in damn quick. So after a year of that coming here, I just kind of bought my time and I mean there's loads of phenomenal players around me, and the whole coaching staff was pretty knowledgeable. So I mean, I didn't really need a voice up anyway.
So what do you think it is about Treviso? Sorry, Benetton this year, which is making them so formidable. Because as it stands, I think you're 1 point below Ulster, who are a perennial power. You've won as many as you've lost, and you're playing some really good stuff. I think you lost to Lon, didn't you, by 1 point or 2 points?
Oh, don't bring it up.
Well, we might have to.
No, yeah, that was incredible. That was one of the most heartbreaking moments of my career. Like,
I bet.
No one would ever expected it. And I think it was literally the 80th minute, a scrum penalty right in front, and he just banged it over to win them the game. And the emotion, like our president, even Luciano Benetton was at the game, who was Benetton Rugby. So he was there with our president, and they were in the change room, and the president was in absolute tears of how proud he was of us, and we'd lost. if we had won that, it would have just been, we would have been talked about for years in the Benetton circles, because it was huge for us.
And do you think that might be sort of the issue with Italian rugby, which is that, yeah,
like, I know the question.
Yeah, I mean that is sort of a victory, and it isn't, is it?
No, and that's something we're trying to change this year, from at Benetton and with the national team. I mean, Benetton, we're at the point where we're not accepting. I mean, yeah, we had loads of close losses and stuff, and we used to be happy with that. But now you see real anger in the boys' eyes coming off field after a 1 point loss.
Yeah,
especially the last few weeks with letting slip by Cardiff and Connacht, which were games we'd hoped to put away. Boys are just not happy with coming close anymore, and that's one of the best changes I've seen this year. If I could have asked for one change, it'd be that, the hunger to win.
Yeah, and most impressively as well is obviously Benetton are shorn of all their Italian players. It, you know, the actual strength in depth now is far more impressive than in previous years.
Yeah, I feel for Kieran next week when he has to pick a team, because I don't see anywhere we can easily fit back into the team, because the boys are coming so good. He's going to have a hell of a time trying to select the team and keeping 40 boys happy next week.
So I was up in, I'll tell you where I was actually, I was in Glasgow, and we were talking about Benetton with one who, I think, was it last season or was it this season? I don't even remember. But I was talking to one of the boys about travelling over to Italy, and naively, I sort of said, oh yeah, it's just going to be a straightforward win. And the guy I was talking to looked straight at me and says, no, they've actually built a really solid game around the set piece, scrum, line out, pretty much as good as anyone. So do you think that's kind of the basis from which you've worked on and then kind of worked out from there?
Yeah, I think as a team, we've always had a pretty solid set piece when we needed to. But yeah, I think the consistency of a set piece has become something that's given us that reliable ball to attack from. Because, I mean, if back in the day, if we needed a big scrum, the boys would bar up and push the other team head over heels back 5 metres with no problems. But it was that next scrum after they'd just done that, they thought everything was happy days and easy, and we go back 5 metres.
Yeah.
But I think, there's just that that kind of just a mental aptitude that we're always in the game, and that means our set piece can function more. And listen, we can score tries now from anywhere, which was something we could never do. Our tries came from either mauls or charge downs back in the day, but now we're constructing some pretty nice tries, I think.
I tell you what, there's a winger, and I don't often say his name because I always get it wrong. Is it Espedoza?
Nowhere near. Nope. Esposito.
Is that it? There you go. I love that guy. I think he can really play.
Yeah, he was a big loss. It is an ACL surgery.
Is that what he did?
Yeah, 2 months ago he had it. So he's on a slow road back to recovery, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right about my pronunciation being nowhere near.
Well, I thought you were going to say Monty and Oni, Ioane, and I always thought
that
was his
last
name.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Monty Ioane is a very good player, but it's the other guy whose name I'm not going to try and say again, who I think is really good.
Angelo's incredible. He's as hard as a rock and, pretty hard to tackle.
I was going to say, maybe not the fastest, but he's very, very difficult to get hold of.
Yeah, it's just one of those people that, are hard.
Yeah.
You just, when you try and tackle him, it's like it's going against a brick wall.
Well, I know the Toulon match must have been a real shame for you, but the one which stuck out for me was the Scarlets game. I was convinced that you had that. Convinced.
That was the challenge, European Cup.
Yeah, this year.
Yeah. No, and we were on 14 men in that one too.
Oh yeah, because who went off? Was it Negre?
No, it was Minto. Francesco Minto got red carded for a tackle, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
We've had Ulster again as well. They scored a try in the end. I think there's been three games this year where we've just not understood how you win a game.
Yeah, I think that's a cultural thing. I don't mean culture as in the country, as in like culture within the club.
No, absolutely. Yeah, winning is a culture, and something we're learning this year, and hopefully learnt by now to close out what could be a pretty important season if we can sneak above Ulster.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you probably won't believe this, but most of my listeners don't know a tremendous amount about Benetton. So could you just give us a quick once-over of who your important players are, why they're important, who's up and coming, just an overview of the team?
I guess fresh off the Six Nations, you have to go with Sebastian Negri. He's was at Hartbury last year.
Was he really?
Yeah, Hartbury College. So he came here just as an absolute nobody. Kieran, the coach, said to him, listen, he told me, I had to sit down with him. He's like, I don't know really who you are. I've never seen you play. I didn't sign you. You were a signing of the club. And let's see how the year goes. And he's turned out to be one of the players of the Six Nations and a lot of things I've seen.
He's
just
very good.
Absolute dynamic ball player. So it's hard to speak a bad word about Seb. He's going really good as an up-and-comer, and the way he performs week in, week out. I guess the same we'll say about Tommy Allen. He's really matured over the last 2 months as to be one of the better tens floating around Europe, I reckon. He's always shown glimpses of real quality, and the last few months he's stepped up and put his hand up. Because, I mean, here we've got Marty Banks as well.
Yeah.
Who's Ian McKinley for that matter, who's just as good. I mean,
and he's got a marvelous story as well.
Yeah. I mean, Ian's incredible, his story. Losing an eye, playing for Leinster at the time.
Yeah, I think so.
And yeah, plays every game. Well, I guess I'll go in depth so everyone can understand who he is. But plays with goggles every week and can't see out of his left eye.
Which, by the way, is incredible to not have depth perception and still play at a professional standard.
Yeah, and not just make it. I think he plays at a level where he's competitive to be selected for any team going around.
Yes.
Yeah, Ian's incredible. is it easy to play a joke on too, as you can't see out of the left side. There's always boys floating fingers around his left eye and he has no idea what's going on, but that's not
awesome.
Simone Ferrari is our tight head prop. He's 24 today, actually. It's his birthday. And he'll be the tight head prop for Italy for years to come, and hopefully us. He's just signed for a couple more years, but I think he's in the process of it. But I think the way French clubs seem to clubs love their tight heads props.
Yeah, they do.
He'll be getting a whole bunch of cash trying it over the next few years, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he's going to be demanding a big salary, best someone else be paying him.
Yeah. Well, we can't afford it here.
What do you think the appetite is? And like, the appetite for backing the club is. And what I mean by that is, do you get a impression by the owners and the president that the money is there if the players are there, or is it very much this is the budget and we'll work within it?
The latter. I don't know exactly, but we always ask as a player group asking for loads of things, and the pretty standard answer coming back is the budget. There's no money in the budget for it. Win a few more games and we'll see. but after we'd won five games on the trot, we were starting to ask questions, and there wasn't any new things arriving on our doorstep. So I don't know what kind of money's behind the club, and I don't think the budget's going to grow any more than it is, because at the end of the day, I think the federation has like a 50% share in the club, and I don't think they don't want to throw much more money in.
I was about to ask that. Who actually owns Benetton?
From what I understand, you never know the truth. from what I understand, it used to be Benetton, and that's why we had the power to do whatever we want, because the money was all Benetton. But when 2 or 3 years ago, I think something happened between the club and the federation, and the federation wanted to have some proprietorship. How do you say that? Propriety.
Yeah, go with that. I know what you mean.
Yeah, they wanted to own some of the club, basically. So I don't know how it's finished up, but I think they get a major say in what happens as well.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because, of course, Italy have now got the services of Conor O'Shea. I assume you've had some dealings with Conor?
Yeah, Conor's awesome. Absolutely awesome. I have to say that because I want to be in the team. but on the other side of that, he is really good. He's super proactive. He's at the clubs all week. Not that we have a lot of face-to-face dealing with him, but you always see his car in the car park, and he's having meetings with the coaches, and they're clearly trying, as a Zebre Benetton and the Italian team, trying to create something in between the clubs to grow up to the national team, and that's done by Conor. That's nothing of the federation. That's just something I think he's taken upon his shoulders because he's seen that that's the only way to make Italy rugby better.
Yeah, you do get a feeling from Conor O'Shea that he has a master plan, and it involves systems and changes and pathways and all those modern kind of buzzwords which rugby revolves around now.
Yeah, no, he's a bit. I think he's a one man army, but really, I think he's fighting each day to get more camps for the national team when there can be, and trying to align game. I don't know about game plans as much, but trying to make sure some players are available for certain games and others are resting in other periods, blah, blah, blah. Mm. He's really proactive, I can say that. I mean, when Jack Brunel, the Italian coach before him, was here, I literally never, ever met him in the 2 or 3 years he was the Italian coach.
Really? Never?
Never saw him once at Benetton.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I'd see Conor probably guaranteed once every 2 weeks, if not every week.
And what have your interactions been with him so far? Because obviously you've played under him. I mean, I say obviously you played under him. Does he do the coaching for the national squad, or is that down to somebody else?
No, he's the big dog. He runs all the meetings, and he's the modern day head coach, right? You've got your forwards coach, you've got your backs coach, you've got all these micro coaches. But yeah, he's got final say over everything, and we have a lot of interaction with him. But he's a very good people manager, and I think that's something that's very important here in Italy to keep everyone happy.
Yeah, well, he's also got a great track record. He's won the Premiership, but I think maybe more important than winning the Premiership is the way he bought through players and players at Harlequins, and and the systems that he left behind. And I don't think they really knew how much they missed him until he went.
I don't know. I don't really follow the Premiership so much. I couldn't even told you they'd won a Premiership.
Oh, really? I'm often amazed by the lack of rugby knowledge shown by professional players.
That's a strange thing. I mean, I don't watch rugby really. I watch all of our games, obviously.
Yeah.
If I wake up on a Saturday morning and there's a Super Rugby game on, I'll watch it, but I certainly don't really set an alarm clock to watch any games of rugby.
So you're not tuning in to watch the Super Rugby back home or any such thing?
Nah. I mean, I'll happily watch a game if I wake up and it's on, but never set an alarm and get up at 7:30 on a Saturday morning to watch a game.
So the sad thing is, that's exactly what I would do. So, if as a professional rugby player, your hobby isn't rugby, what are you doing in your free time then?
I guess the whole world's in love with Fortnite, the PlayStation game at the moment.
I had a feeling that PlayStation might come into it. Go on.
No, I'm an addict at this point. I think I'm close to the point where I need to seek help because. playing with all other professional rugby players, they're not just friends, random friends back from school or whatever.
Yeah.
Every single guy I play with is playing professional rugby somewhere in Europe.
Mate, you are not wrong. You are not wrong. I did an interview with a tight head prop from Northampton. I'll tell you his name, but from some things, it wouldn't have made a difference. And that's basically what he loves doing outside of rugby. In fact, I think Joe the England hooker, Luke Cowan-Dickie.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain he is top 10 in the world at a certain game, but it escapes me what that game is.
Wow, I'm not putting up any good stats like that.
that's
impressive.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I guess the worry for me is that one day these esports are actually going to take over real sports. That's if they haven't already and we just haven't noticed it.
I've become certainly a bit of a nerd after getting my PlayStation, and the esports whole, like the YouTube, all that world's just incredible how much money's involved.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I've thought a million times over to start a YouTube channel.
You should do it.
It's really nothing to lose, absolutely. And they make some of them make some incredible money. I don't think anyone wants to watch a battler die 20 times in a row, though.
Well, for gaming. So, have you ever watched Brian Majority's YouTube videos?
I have actually. Yeah,
I think he's
one of the
brilliant.
South African boys in our team was in love with him for a while.
He wanted
to be a bodybuilder like him.
Yeah, he's amazing because he would go to training and then he goes to the gym. I can't imagine you could do that much gym work and still play at that standard, but somehow he does it.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I watched two or three videos, and the one I saw, he was up at like 5 a.m. Going to the gym before he had to start his whole day of training.
That's savage, isn't it?
Yeah, it's madness.
Yeah.
No time for that.
It's probably too much. Right, so you've been more than generous with your time, Dean. Just give me some predictions for how your season's going to go. And also, why don't you stick your neck out and tell me how much you're going to improve next season as well?
I would be disappointed if we're not playing semi-finals rugby next year. So that's top six. And I think that's been generous. I'd hope we finish fourth this year. I think it's realistic looking at Ulster's run home and ours.
Mm.
They've got a game up their sleeve, but they've got some tough opponents. And no disrespect to Zebre or Dragons, who we both play at home, but those are games that we should win. And Leinster on the road is going to be a tough one for us,
yeah,
as it always is. But hopefully can get 8 points out of the next three games, and that means Ulster's going to have to win some of theirs. So, yeah, our goal is definitely to finish fourth this year, or fourth in our pool. And next year, I think we want to be playing some sort of semi-final rugby. So that means top six. Excellent. I think if we didn't have that ambition, we're pretty much with no point starting next year.
Well, you know what? I've got a sneaky suspicion that you might just do it based on this season.
I think our results are real this year. I don't think it's one of those seasons where we've been lucky. I think it's come from hard work and foundations were put in place culture-wise and on and off the field. So I really believe that we should be in the semis next year.
Now, Dean, where can we find you on social media? Where are you most active? Give us all your handles.
I don't even bother with my Twitter. As you know, I'm pretty slack on Twitter.
Yeah, we're working on a 6-week turnaround on Twitter, aren't we?
I think my Twitter's Dean Bud with 3 D's on the end because someone had the other Bud. but mostly I use Instagram, and my Instagram's DSBud, DSBUDD. And that's where you'll find me mainly, if I'm being social at all, if I'm not playing PlayStation.
Fantastic. Well, mate, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it, and best of luck with the rest of your season.
All right, thank you very much. Pleasure's been mine.
Cheers, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.